show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Willkommen, bienvenue, and welcome to another edition of the Kansas City Baseball Vault. My name is Michael Lingle. I'm in the driver's seat for another week because, like you've probably heard over the last couple weeks, Jeff Herr, who usually steers the ship, is now a father. The daughter was born this morning. I'm not going to give out the name because Jeff and I haven't talked about how many details we're giving out. So you can ask him if you want. And if you want to send your congratulations, it's the Jeff Report on Twitter. Just tell him congrats. So that's pretty exciting. But he's on paternity leave. So last week we talked with Ben Nielsen, and Ben and I talked about some of the players who are going to be free agents after 2017, Lorenzo Cain, Mike Moustakas, Eric Hosmer, et cetera, et cetera. We do have to issue a correction, and if you heard the episode later in the day after we uploaded it, we made a mistake in that we were quoting the wrong free agent class in reference to where those guys would be landing. The general point, I think, still stands that it's going to be a matter of risk on the Royals' part, and it's going to matter, you know, what the other free agents are going to eat up. But, you know, we did want to make sure to issue that correction again. We didn't want to rerun a new episode and call it original or anything like Lee Judge. But since Jeff is out, Ben was helping last week. This week, I've got Hunter Samuels here. Hunter has been a writer for Kings of Kaufman and Pine Tar Press in his own little corner of the world. And he was also on the Royals Podcast Network on the Triple Play podcast. We're very grateful that he's here to help out. Hunter, how's it going today?
I am doing very well. How about yourself?
Not too bad. Just it's another day closer to the start of spring training. We're just a few days away from the official report date for pitchers and catchers. Although a lot of guys are there already. I think, I don't know. I don't remember when the turn was, but there's a certain point where pitchers and catchers was less of like an official deadline and really just more like, hey, this is the day it happened. But any more players get down there pretty early. I think Alex Gordon's probably been down there for like 3 weeks doing sprints and lifts and things like that, just getting himself ready. But that's really exciting. Let's just kick it off. We'll catch up from things that happened last week. Last week, Mike Moustakas was one of the guys that we talked about on these potential contract extension situations. At that point, he had not come to an agreement on salary. He was offered arbitration. This is his second to last year of team control, so it's his second year of arbitration. He is, one of the guys we talked about last week. He has since agreed to a 2-year deal. It's $14.3 million. He's going to get $5.6 million this year and $8.7 million in 2017. Hunter, I know you listened to our show last week because you pointed out our mistake, and we're grateful for that. But are you surprised that they went with this 2-year deal for Moustakas, or did you think that there was going to be a longer contract, or is this about what you were thinking was going to happen?
I was kind of expecting the 2-year deal to happen. There was a small possibility for that long-term deal. I know that he had mentioned that to Jeffrey Flanagan, that they were discussing a 1-year deal, a 2-year deal, and a long-term deal. And obviously, you know, we've talked about the Scott Boras thing, how he doesn't really like his clients to lock themselves into long-term extensions, prefers for them to hit the free agent market. But considering, I guess, Moose's pedigree and the way that he's kind of connected to the fans and to the city and to the organization, there was a slim chance that he might stick around past 2017. But it's a really tricky situation with where he is in regards to that extension. For the Royals to actually get a bargain, they would have to lock him in at a pretty high price right now. Because if he wants to bet on himself for another year, the odds of getting an extension beyond 2017 were zero. Because, you know, he's only had one really good year. But if he hits the free agent market coming off of three consecutive good years, he's a $100 million player. Kyle Seager just got nine figures, and he's a fairly similar player. He had a better track record. But it was going to be expensive to get Moustakas locked in, even with only just the one good year. So it makes sense for them to get cost certainty for this year and for next year. If he does have another solid year, they're getting a pretty good bargain, because you kind of figured if he would have repeated his 2015 season this coming year, he's looking at probably another million or two on top of what they have him locked in at. So it makes sense. There are probably a lot of fans that would prefer to see Moose stick around. And even as a free agent, they may be able to re-sign him. I doubt it happens. But it makes sense, and it definitely provides the cost certainty that the Royals are looking for the next 2 years.
Yeah, and that's something that they did with Eric Hosmer last season, where they got him this 2-year deal, and now he's, you know, he had a good season. They're going to pay him $8.25 million. Possibly would have gotten more than that in an arbitration settlement. Kelvin Herrera did the same kind of thing, and he's going to make $2.5 million. So it's a good way for them to kind of know where they're at in that regard. And I think it was the other day, Craig Brown, it was actually this morning, Craig Brown posted kind of a thing on payroll clarity, as he put it, and pointed out that, you know, if something does go wrong this year and the Royals do recognize that, hey, we're losing now, maybe we want to trade one of these guys, you can use that as a selling point. Say, hey, Mike Moustakas is hitting well, we want to trade him to you, and you know what he's going to make next year. Same with Lorenzo Cain. You know what the dollar amount's going to be. It's not a team getting today's contract and an arbitration deal for that second year. It's you know what it is. It's baked in there. And so maybe that gives them a little more value. Maybe it makes it a little more flexible for the acquiring team. Hopefully that doesn't happen. Hopefully the Royals win 95 or more games again and win the division. Projections so far aren't really friendly to them, but I think we've learned by now to not really care what the projections say, because the Royals find a way to exceed those pretty much every year at this point. But the main thing we wanted to talk about this week was spring training, since pitchers and catchers are reporting. The Royals roster is mostly set, but there are a few intriguing battles for playing time that we wanted to take a look at, and some of them that are going to be pretty important. I mean, last year, the Royals at different points, Omar Infante was the starting second baseman, really struggled, finally went down with an injury. Ben Zobrist took over for him. Alex Rios struggled all year, was in right field. There was never any real contenders for those spots, and those are kind of some of the areas that we want to look at again. So let's just start there. Start at second base. Omar Infante is the incumbent. He's been on a multi-year deal. He's going to make over just about $8 million this year, $7.75 million, coming off a really miserable year where he didn't hit anything. Just one of the worst everyday seasons in recent history. .234 on base percentage, .318 slugging. And like, he had 44 RBIs, but I think nine of those were in the same game, or seven of them were in the same game. Against, I believe, Cleveland. And so it's just like that, combined with his age, combined with his injury history, make him a very unreliable, very unsavory option for second base. But he did have surgery on the elbow. Elbow's been a thing for the past couple of seasons. That's finally cleaned out. So do you think that Infante, with a healthy arm, fully, recovered and everything, is going to have a rebound, or is he going to still stay in that really miserable 49 to 70 OPS plus territory.
I think it would be very difficult for him to be as bad or worse than he was in 2015. I don't expect anything like his 2013 season in Detroit when he had a 115 OPS plus, or even in 2012 where it was 91 and 2011 he was at 90. I don't even know if he's going to approach those numbers, but if that elbow really was as much of a problem as they say it was, and also the, you know, taking a fastball to the face when he first came to Kansas City.
Yeah.
Dayton Moore's mentioned that several times, that they really don't feel like he has gotten right from that. And that's kind of affected his approach, which he's always been a very high contact player. But he hasn't been a guy to chase pitches out of the strike zone as much until 2015. And, you know, maybe that was a bit of the injuries, also feeling the pressure of, okay, there's some guys behind me that I really need to push myself to produce. So maybe he was pressing a little bit. But I do think he's going to be better if he's healthy. That's really the only question for me. If he's healthy, he's going to get the job. I just can't see them placing a healthy Omar Infante, making, you know, almost $8 million, putting him on the bench in favor of Christian Colon. You know, and Colon would still be the de facto utility man when they want to give Moustakas or Escobar a day off, which, you know, Escobar doesn't get days off. But,
right.
You know, if they want to give Moose a day off, they would just put Colon at third anyway and put Infante at second. So he'd still get a few starts around the infield. So basically, if Omar is healthy, he should be a safe bet to improve on his 2015 production. And, you know, I'm not the biggest believer in Christian Colon as a full-time second baseman. He's hit well thus far, but it's still, you know, I saw him in Omaha and he was never the most impressive player to watch. So I'm a little skeptical that he's going to be able to sustain what he's done thus far. I would definitely give the leg up to Infante at this point.
Yeah. The raw numbers, just kind of glancing at them for Colon. I mean, you know, 303 average, 361 OBP. I mean, you know, that'll play, but you also have to remember that, hey, that's only 64 games, and even then, that's part-time duty. That's mostly defensive replacement or late-game replacement or something like that, where, you know, he's never been a guy who they've done much unless he's filling in for somebody. And, you know, I think the thing we always heard about Colon was that, hey, he's going to be this Polanco-light kind of guy, and you know, so far he hasn't even lived up to that. It's, you know, something, maybe it's a preparation thing. I've heard here and there that, hey, he hasn't really gotten himself in a position to even push for this, and the Royals aren't really wanting to reward that. But at the same time, you know, even when you just look at his minor league numbers, it's nothing that really is pushing anybody to put him in that position where he's going to unseat a guy who's making so much money. You know, I mean, it's decent. I mean, he looks like he's kind of a similar player to Infante, you know, high contact, doesn't walk a ton, walks more than Infante, but still not a lot. And so that has to really be the kind of crux of it. Can he force them to put him in that position? So if you do have an Infante who's recovering to, you know, I don't know, almost average kind of territory, how much better does Colon have to be? Hopefully it's a situation where they are pushing each other and neither of them are really, like, you know, pressing like Infante may have been last year, as you suspected, or that Colon finally, like, reaches up, seizes the opportunity and does something. But I mean, what does that spring training line have to look like, do you think, for Colon? Does he, like, hit 400 through all spring and Infante just has to hit like 150? I mean,
and even then, I don't know if it really matters.
Yeah.
You know, if Omar plays solid defense, which his defense did look better last year, which is odd considering he still had the bone spur issue on his elbow. But I really don't know what Colon is going to have to do to actually get the starting nod. I'm not sure if there's anything he can do on the spring training field to push past Omar. I think it's probably going to be something where if Omar struggles for the first couple weeks of the season, maybe they start to back off for his starts and give Colon a few more. But it's, yeah, I'm very skeptical that this battle for second base is really a battle.
Yeah, and when you have that much money invested in Infante, you have to justify it somehow, and 1 month of exhibition games really probably isn't going to do anything about it. But at least it does leave the Royals in a position where they have a good utility guy who could step in if he needed to. You know, I don't know that they would ever want to use Orlando Calixte in that kind of position or anybody else. It's pretty much Colon's role, and it's what he did for a lot of his time in the big leagues. But it's still kind of disappointing because, I mean, there is a point where you're like, you still have to settle for Omar Infante. I mean, I guess if he's the worst player you've got, that's, you know, hopefully everybody else is able to still step up. Last year, it was obviously not that huge of an issue because the rest of the team played pretty well. You know, just five guys who were well above average offensively. But I don't know, there's something just disappointing about it. It's too bad they couldn't have re-signed Ben Zobrist, but, you know, I guess I'd rather they re-sign Alex Gordon than Ben Zobrist and just live with Infante or Colon if he happens to win it. I think you're right, though, that there's nothing coming out of spring training that's going to put Colon in that spot unless it's an injury by Infante or he's just absolutely miserable and there's no other way around it. It just seems like he's got the job and has to lose it more than Colon can really jump over him. It's just going to be his by default, and unless something crazy happens, it's not going to change, which is it worked last year, so I guess we'll call that Infante. Last year, one of my bold predictions was that Colon was going to be the starting second baseman by the end of the year, and that didn't really happen because of Zobrist, but it would have if they hadn't acquired Zobrist.
Sure.
Let's just get the backup catcher thing out of the way. Do you even see that as any kind of a thing? Is there a significant difference in your eyes between Drew Butera and Tony Cruz, who the Royals acquired shortly after the World Series?
No, I think it's pretty clear cut that Butera will be the backup and Cruz, who has options, which I didn't realize when they traded for.
Yeah.
So which was really, I was like, why would they trade for another guy making $1 million who's not going to even make the roster? But since he has options, you know, they had they designated Pena for assignment. He ended up in Baltimore. I'm assuming that had he, you know, cleared waivers and maybe just been outrighted to Omaha, they might have given Cruz a bit more of a chance at the backup job, but now they don't really have a catcher ready for Omaha, so they'll just send him to AAA and he can work with the pitchers down there.
Yeah, and there's certainly no reason to have three catchers on this Royals team. There's almost not much reason to have two catchers on this team the way that Sal Perez ends up playing.
Yeah.
I did think it was kind of weird that they got Cruz, though, because, I mean, Butera, I mean, he didn't hit well. He hit like Drew Butera, but he seemed to handle things all right for the most part. There was maybe a week where he was really, really bad with Greg Holland throwing to him. And I remember people had their pitchforks out and things like that. But, you know, I thought he afforded himself well enough for a guy who's going to get, I don't know, 100 plate appearances. I mean, 150,
yeah,
maybe. I mean, just I don't remember what his contract. His contract has some kind of bonus for like 25 games played. It's like, I mean, there's reasonable, you know, he got 31 last year, so I guess he can probably clear that bonus, but it's a number that you could almost see maybe they don't get to that just because Sal Perez plays so much. Hopefully that position does not make any difference at all. I was surprised that in that whole deal that they let Pena go. I mean, I haven't seen him hardly at all. Was he that bad defensively that they just couldn't even try to like bank on any kind of home run upside with him?
I actually was surprised that when they made the move that they said Cruz was better defensively than Pena, because I was always impressed with Pena's defense. He had a really strong arm, moved pretty well behind the plate considering he's a bigger guy. you know, I thought that's what was getting rave reviews from all the scouting reports that I read when they first signed him. So for them to kind of give up on him after that much, you know, not much time at all in the majors, and like I said, from what I saw in Omaha, he seemed to be holding his own defensively. So I'm not sure if there were any other circumstances there, but you know, the bat wasn't going to be much, but I don't see any reason why he couldn't hang in the as a backup catcher's spot with the Royals.
Yeah, I always like the teams where you have that backup catcher who's just kind of like, maybe he's not great defensively, but if you're only using him once a week and he's got some home run pop to him, like George Gutierrez, like I thought that was like the best catching duo they could have had. I understand that Gutierrez is not great defensively and that he seems to have some kind of plague to him.
Yeah, that is the weirdest situation ever.
Like, I've heard people
no
just,
team has kept him.
Yeah, it's like I haven't heard that he's like a complete jerk or anything, but maybe that's it. I just don't know. That's such a weird situation to me to see him bounce around like that. But yeah, I mean, backup catcher is probably the least consequential position in all of sports on the Royals. It's just not going to be any kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
But what is possibly a big deal, and one of the more intriguing things, is how the bullpen will shake up. We can assume that Wade Davis is going to be there at the back. He's going to be the cyborg at the back of the bullpen, closing games out like he was at the end of last season and various points when Greg Holland was hurt. That makes sense. Kelvin Herrera is going to set him up. And then the Royals got Joaquin Soria. So there's your three-headed monster once again. Plus, you've got Luke Hochaver. And then it gets kind of interesting. I think at this stage, once they got Kennedy, it was pretty clear that Danny Duffy's probably going to get to the bullpen. It's what he prefers. It's probably where he plays up the best. I don't think you can ever count on 200 innings out of Danny Duffy. So if you can get 80 to 90 out of him, or even, you know, over 100, and give him that kind of swing man, kind of let, you know, two innings of relief kind of thing going on, that's probably his best value, because he's pitched well in that spot before. He's, you know, comfortable in that spot, and it extends that bullpen even more to where that's five really strong relievers for those, you know, for a bullpen that's already really, really strong, and even like a trend setting kind of bullpen. So do you think Duffy's going to make more than 10 starts this year, even that?
I think 10's a pretty good number. I think that's the number that I've been kind of bouncing around in my own head, along with Medlin and Young. I think that they'll all kind of spend a little bit of time in the bullpen. You know, Young and Medlin will probably get more starts, but their innings are going to have to be managed as well, and Duffy is obviously going to be on the roster in some role, so they can, you know, give him a spot start here and there and just kind of try and keep Medlin and Young as fresh as possible. But you know, I love Duffy. I do think he has a chance to make an impact as a starting pitcher. But on this roster, having him in the bullpen really does make sense. And I think he's going to be lights out back there. You know, a 96, 97 mile an hour fastball from the left side, along with a curveball that, you know, he can really let loose with. He's just going to be deaf on left-handed batters. and he can handle righties as well. But a team like the Indians, you know, they rely on a lot of left-handed hitters in their lineup.
Yeah.
You bring Duffy into the middle of that game, and it's over. So.
Right.
It'll be fun to watch him kind of transform into yet another cyborg back there.
Right. And then, I mean, at any given day, you could have any trio go out there and probably close it out as well as any other team. Except maybe the Yankees. You could probably have the best Royals trio up against the Yankees' best trio, and it's probably about equal. And then that's a pretty good spot to be in.
Yeah.
But that does leave a couple of bullpen spots open. So I guess I'll just rattle off some names as I'm looking at the 40-man roster and the non-roster invitees. There's Scott Alexander, who was around last year, Miguel Almonte, Christian Benford's a non-roster invitee. I wouldn't expect him. Tim Collins may be healthy around May, give or take, as he comes back from Tommy John surgery. Brian Flynn missed all of last year, but he's apparently healthy. Should be at least somebody that they look at in there. Dylan G is one of the better minor league signings of the offseason. And I just, as we go through this list, he's probably one guy who I think is going to be on there. It's probably assumed when he signed that deal that he was going to make it, as long as things didn't go completely haywire with his performance. Let's see. There's David Huff, who they signed. John Lannon, who they signed, who's kind of intriguing. Alec Mills, probably not ready. Brooks Pounders, still a ways to go. Let me see. Almost to the end of the list. I guess Kyle Zimmer, maybe. So of those guys, I mean, who do you think, just now, before anybody's thrown anything off the mound, who are the favorites in your eyes?
I think I really like Brian Flynn. I saw him in spring training last year, and he was just dominant. I saw him, I think he threw two innings when I watched him, and he looked great. You know, he's big, tall, strong, left-handed guy, wipeout slider, good, hard fastball. So I think he has a pretty good shot of breaking camp with the team. And I do think he has one option left. So if he doesn't, he can spend some time in Omaha, and he'll get some big league innings this year for sure. But I would probably put him up there. I totally agree with you on G. He's going to be out of the 40 man pretty much first thing at beginning of March. As soon as they move Vargas to the 60-day DL, G will get his 40 man spot, because I mean that was basically as a part of his contract, was he has an early March opt out if he's not added to the 40 man. So you know he'll be there, and I think he's definitely got a good chance of heading north with the Royals. And he's probably, I guess, the seventh starter. Maybe they'll look for him to start games in front of Duffy, just kind of depending on how he looks. But he's a really intriguing name. Peter Moylan is another guy that might have a chance. I don't know what his opt-out situation is for his contract, but he's had some injury issues. But when he's been healthy, you know, a few years ago with Atlanta, he was ridiculously good. You know, kind of a low sidearm Lewis Coleman kind of thing. And he could be a name to watch, as well as Huff and Lannon. You know, Chen Ming Wong is going to be in camp. I don't know what he has left.
Yeah, I can't expect much out of him. But
yeah, but I definitely think Flynn, G, and to a lesser extent, like Moylan and Huff are going to be some guys to watch. I do like Scott Alexander quite a bit, especially as a lefty specialist, but the Royals don't really have a need for a lefty specialist.
Right.
Because, you know, their big name relievers don't have platoon problems. So they're just, he wouldn't really get many innings. I think he'd probably be a better fit in Omaha. And I'm higher on Miguel Almonte than just about anybody. So I do think he's going to make an impact in Kansas City this year, but probably not until later on in the season in September, you know, a September call up kind of thing. And Zimmer, I'd like to see him in the rotation at some point in Kansas City this year, but definitely not right away.
You can't bank on anything with Kyle Zimmer. And it's a shame, because I mean, when you look at all the prospect rankings that come out, even with all those red flags, even with all those issues, he's still a guy that a lot of prospects, you know, experts and specialists still see as like a number one, number two kind of guy, almost, depending on who you ask, and at least a ton of upside in the bullpen. And that's despite the fact that he can't even stay healthy. So I can't even imagine what the deal would be if he, you know, had a fully intact body. And it's also not, you know, when we were talking to Jim Callis a couple of weeks ago, he pointed out it's like five different injuries. It's not like it's one thing. It's not like he keeps battling the shoulder. It's, you know, bone chips here, a lat, the shoulder tightness, and this and that. And it's like, I mean, what's going to be next? He's basically the guy from operation, but if he ever gets out there, it's going to be really exciting to just follow him. I'm not sure if this is the year. I assume they really want it to be just because they want to get something, but I don't know. He's intriguing.
And I think if he does have a healthy season, if he stays on the mound all year, he'll be a top 15 prospect next year. I mean, just reading the scouting reports, like you said, if he has the stuff and the look of a number one starter, but he just hasn't been able to stay healthy despite, like, coming out of the draft, he looked like the kind of pitcher that could stay healthy, you know, very athletic, not many miles on his arm at all.
Right.
And he's just been completely snake bitten.
So you brought up Lewis Coleman, which when Coleman got drafted, he was fresh on my mind because they had just won the College World Series that year. That was, 2009. And the Royals put him in rookie ball right away, and he just basically did a Wade Davis impersonation before there was a Wade Davis to impersonate, and just, you know, flipping middle fingers, getting guys out. Not literally flipping middle fingers, but figuratively.
Yeah, they might get in trouble for that.
Yeah, it's probably not what you want to do in rookie ball for this organization. But, I mean, he had one bad year, and since he's pretty much been turfed, I mean, how much have you seen of him in Omaha? Do you notice anything huge that is way off on him, or is it just one of those logistical things that they just had to make a move on him?
I really have not understood his entire last few years, and not just how the Royals have designated him for assignment twice now, which is kind of strange, but the fact that he's cleared waivers both times.
Right.
You know, no other team. Look at all the teams that have struggled with their bullpen in the last year. Look at the Detroit Tigers. They could have had Coleman for free, basically.
Yeah.
And he's cleared waivers both times. In Omaha, the few times that I have watched him, I don't notice any red flags. I mean, you know, he's a side armor that sometimes the command can waver a little bit. And I don't know if maybe teams are looking at him as a guy that only, you know, you want to face right-handed batters, kind of worrying about lefties against him since he's, you know, got the sidearm delivery and doesn't have a changeup. It's just the two-seamer and the slider. But it's definitely been a very odd case for him. I remember talking with him last year at the AAA All-Star game, and, you know, he didn't really lead into any problems or anything like that. He just said that he's always ready for the next opportunity, and he, you know, he did get called up and everything later on in the season, but it's been a really strange path for him to have taken.
Yeah. And he's still out there. Nobody's picked him up or signed him, yeah, as far as I've seen. So maybe there's something else. I don't know, but just very confusing to me. You know, I'm kind of interested in the guys like Lannon and Huff, you know, just not that I think they're going to contribute. They might here and there as injuries happen, but the Royals last year, they traded so many guys. Like, you know, Sean Manaea probably would have gotten some kind of look this year, even if just in September, you know, Brandon Finnegan was already on the big league team quite a bit, you know, up and down last season. John Lamb definitely probably would have made it in September if not for the trade to Cincinnati. Aaron Brooks had already been up a couple of times, and Cody Reed is a pretty fast riser. So, I mean, any of those five guys would have probably been guys you'd see either making it to Omaha or, you know, taking the I-29 Express, you know, back and forth as injuries and options and things occur during the season. And so guys like Lannon and Huff, to me, I don't think they're going to be much competition this spring, but I think they're guys that if they pitch well, they have that opportunity to be like a Joe Blanton type, where they might contribute here and there to come up, do a spot start and things like that. Guys who have some experience in the big leagues, both of them, I think Huff's left-handed, both are left-handed in that case. You know, which, hey, it never hurts to have another left-handed starter, I suppose. I don't see them as maybe big in this competition, but yeah, I think I'm probably in the same boat with you. I figure G's probably a safe assumption. Flynn's probably a good call too, I think. You know, he's definitely probably close to making it last year. I think Madsen was the guy who made it over him at the end of spring training, and then Flynn got hurt on top of it. So we definitely would have seen him if he was healthy last season. I think there's maybe a chance they would look at Alexander or Almonte, at least out of the bullpen, if they were able to hide him. But maybe that's irresponsible with Almonte if they really think he can still start. Sounds like you're pretty confident he's going to be able to start once he gets things kind of back in place after a rough call-up last year. Is that pretty accurate?
Yeah, I mean, he still has to work on his fastball command, no question about that. And his curveball still isn't great. But, gosh, that fastball changeup combo is so, so much fun to watch. Mm-hmm. You know, when I watched him in Omaha, I saw one of his first starts with the Storm Chasers. And I was sitting behind home, and I thought I was watching his two-seamer because I was looking at the radar, and it was 91, 92. And then the more I watched it, like that's a changeup. That's a 91-mile-an-hour changeup. And he would dial it up 94, 97 with his fastball. It's definitely a weapon that he can use out of the bullpen. I think his floor is as a middle reliever. A likely role is something like a fourth starter, possibly a seventh or eighth inning guy. But it's easy to dream when you see that kind of fastball along with a changeup. If he can work on his fastball command a little bit, so that way he can be more aggressive, because a lot of times he would just fall behind hitters and just end up losing them too early. But if he can hit his spots with his fastball, get ahead and go to work with his secondaries, especially, you know, he does need to refine that curveball a little bit more. The one that I saw him throw was it flashed probably above average, but nothing special. So he definitely has a little bit more of work to do. But from what I've seen, I'm definitely very, very optimistic about his future.
Yeah, that curveball, it's always been the one thing that's missing. It's always been, well, he's got this hard fastball. He's got this great changeup. He needs to work on the curveball. And then it was like, well, they want him to try a slider. And now it's like, well, they have this slurvy thing. So it's something that, if that does develop, I think that's probably a good thing to keep him in the rotation. But, you described him, it sounds a lot like Kelvin Herrera to me.
Yes. He's a poor man's Herrera right now, for sure.
Which is, you know, that's not a bad niche to fall into if it doesn't work out as a starter. It's certainly something that's provided Herrera with a lot of value on this team, and they've gotten a lot from him, and you know, it's the same kind of combination. And Herrera this year, you know, towards the end was using a new slider too. So, you know, it's not like it's something that can't develop later. But if you can get down the line 200 innings from Almonte instead of 70, that's probably better value for you. He's a 6'2", so that's, you know, 4 inches on paper at least taller than Herrera. Who knows what the, you know, actual in clubhouse measurement
is. Quite 6'2".
yeah, but you know, still bigger than Herrera. So
yeah.
I, you know, definitely you always hope that those guys can start versus just be bullpen guys. You know, there are some, like Holland was definitely he's drafted as a reliever, and Coleman as well, and Herrera after a certain point it was very clear that he wasn't probably going to hold up as a starter. And maybe that'll be what happens to Almonte, but you know, I think if nothing else, he'll probably be in the bullpen a little bit this year, not out of camp, but he'll probably be there until about that last week of camp. And you get to kind of take a look at him there. So I think we're pretty close in agreement on the bullpen. Flynn and G, they kind of seem about right. Everybody else, they either have the options, they're not on the 40-man, or they don't necessarily fit unless they really, really come out of the gate strong, like Ryan Madsen did last season in spring training. So
and Collins will be ready in about May, so he won't be an issue out of camp.
Yeah, so we'll see how that goes. But for now, we're going to take a break, And when we come back, we're going to talk about maybe not a spring training battle, but something that could still be maybe upgraded, still has some intrigue. And that is the Royals outfield, specifically the right field spot. So stick with us through the break, and we will be back on the other side.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages.
We saw two or three different replays. It was a bang-bang play at first, yet the replays show rather conclusively that the Royals got a tremendous, gigantic break.
The Vault.
Hey, Troy, what are you doing this weekend?
I'm going to grab a beer somewhere. What do you have in mind?
I heard about this awesome new bar downtown. It's called Rage. The waitresses have a contest to see who has the most piercing.
No, man, that's not really my scene.
Well, there's another bar close by called Spit Cup. Check it out. The bartenders wear chaps, and every hour they shoot a guy.
No, seriously, I just want a bar where I can sit down and watch the game.
Okay, I've got just the place. It's called Lilac. You sit on pillows, and you drink from eucalyptus leaves.
No, Ned, but I just want a place where I can get a cheap drink and watch the football game.
Okay, I got it. This place, it's got a TV. It's called 816.
Libidotosis.
Yep. All their drinks come in NBA hats.
Man, I just want a place like Kelly's.
Oh, you mean Kelly's Westport Inn? No, they've got all the basketball and bowl games. They've even got a heated roof. The view is really nice, too, if you know what I'm saying. Why didn't you just say you wanted to go to Kelly's?
Kelly's Westport Inn, 500 Westport Road. Make it your place to go any time of the week.
No halftime. An all-new fantasy sports app that allows you to challenge friends with individual player matchups for real money. Imagine ODB versus Megatron, King James versus Melo. No Halftime is quick and easy and allows you to create challenges on any sport. No Halftime. The fantasy sports season never takes a break. Download the app at nohalftime.com.
Use promo code Royals at nohalftime.com to sign up, start playing, and start winning today. And welcome back to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. Thanks for sticking with us through the break. This week, we're talking about spring training battles. We talked about the backup catcher position, oh so important to the Kansas City Royals. Somebody has to help Sal Perez with the Gatorade dunking, I guess. We talked about the bullpen, and we talked about second base. For this segment, not so much a battle, I don't think, as far as picking out who's going to start the season. But there are some names of intrigue in the Royals outfield in camp this spring. A lot of guys that you've heard about for years, a lot of guys who you saw last year. Obviously, Alex Gordon's in left field. He's going to be there as long as he's healthy. Same for Lorenzo Cain. And in right field, the Royals, I'm going to be working with Jerod Dyson and Paulo Orlando. At least that's what they're saying right now. I think it's safe to assume that's what they're going to continue with throughout different points last season. Alex Rios was hurt early with a broken hand. Both of those guys filled in well. When Alex Gordon went down in July, they both filled in then as well. So both can probably handle it as a platoon and splitting it up. Both have speed. Both are good defenders. Orlando has a little bit of pop to him. Dyson is Jerod Dyson. He's the ultimate on-base weapon. So let's just assume that those two guys are going to be the starters. But there are a few names that are going to be in camp, and one of those is somebody that we've mentioned, but we haven't really talked in depth, and that's Travis Snyder, who the Royals signed on a minor league deal not too long ago. Former big-time prospect, came up when he was 20 years old with the Blue Jays. Hit 14 homers when he was 22. He's kind of bounced around since. Went to Pittsburgh, went to Baltimore. But still, he's only, as of today, he turned 28 2 weeks ago. And now, or not even 2 weeks ago, 13 days ago. So he's still kind of in that kind of area where you feel like he's got some of that peak to him. How does he factor into you, Hunter?
He's definitely an intriguing guy. You mentioned that he was a big-time prospect with the Blue Jays, and it's difficult for baseball teams to see a guy that other teams give up on when they see the talent coming up when he was younger. You know, they can't just give up on that dream. So it makes all the sense in the world for them to have gotten him with a minor league contract and see if they can kind of unlock what it was that made him so successful in 2014 when he had a 117 OPS plus with the Pirates. He had 13 home runs, another 15 doubles. So he does have some talent in there. And I'm really curious to see how they deploy him. He doesn't have any huge platoon splits. So if it is something where he breaks camp with a team, I could almost see him supplanting Dyson and Orlando, putting Dyson back to the fourth outfielder role that he's been so used to, and Orlando as a fifth outfielder on the bench for defense and base running and the very rare day when they need two extra bench outfielders to get the start. So I'm really curious just to see how things go with him, because he has talent. He's had a successful season, a full season, just 2 years ago. So it's not like we're dreaming on a player that had a career year in 2008. He's still young. He had a solid year. And, you know, despite some struggles last year, he did okay with the Pirates and then kind of struggled with the Orioles. So I don't know. I'm just really curious to see how things go with him.
Yeah, I think anytime you have a chance to get a guy like that, it's kind of like, you know, a guy like Dylan G, who's definitely should be on a roster somewhere. Snyder, you know, he has had his struggles, but you can definitely see looking over year by year, there's something there. And if the Royals can get him with no risk, basically, it's definitely worth doing it. And I don't remember, I think maybe Jerry Krasnick or Buster Olney mentioned that between G and Snyder, those were the two highest upside minor league signings of the offseason. And that's kind of what the Royals need to do when they're kind of stretching their payroll as high as it's ever been. It's, you know, hey, try to get these guys on these, you know, low guarantee deals, and maybe something comes out of it. Kind of like, you know, Ryan Madsen was a huge low risk, high upside kind of thing. Chris Young was similar. I would be definitely interested to see if he can push those guys out. The Royals seem dead set, unless they're trying to sign somebody else. They seem set on going with Dyson in Orlando. But if you do have Colon, assuming Infante is going to be the starter at second base, you have Colon to cover all the infield spots when you need them, and you probably don't need to use him, you know, that often in those spots. So he's going to be fresh a good chunk of the year. And it does give you that opportunity to use Orlando as another pinch runner, potential pinch hitter, a guy who can come in and maybe he finds a gap and gets a game-breaking triple. And can also play a little bit of defense, certainly better than Alex Rios did last year. And then, as you mentioned this over the break, so we should probably include it, a guy like Orlando stashed as the fifth outfielder, last guy on the bench, doesn't really hurt him developmentally because he's 30 years old, and there's not much more to go with him. As sad as it as much as it pains me to say that, as somebody in his mid-30s, once you hit 30, there's not much upside left, unfortunately.
I've still got 8 months. 8 months of upside then.
Embrace it. Savor it. Hit the weight room. I don't know. I never figured it out. But aside from those guys, you know, the Royals outfield on the 40-man roster is, at least for me, and I biased obviously because I've been following a lot of these guys in the minor leaguers since, you know, 2010. But guys like Jorge Bonifacio and Brett Eibner and even Raymond Fuentes, who's still a pretty well-regarded prospect and still pretty young for a guy that they picked up just on waivers, I believe, last offseason, or before, you know, well, it was last winter of 2014.
Yeah, they had traded, an A-ball pitcher, Kyle Bartsch.
Yeah.
Acquire him from the Padres. But, I mean,
basically
Bartsch wasn't any big-name prospect himself, so.
So those guys are going to be in camp. You've got to see a lot of Eibner. And Jose Martinez, we need to mention also, who just kind of came out of nowhere last year and hit, what, 378 last year?
I think 384.
384.
Yeah, he set the PCL record. So
just
was crazy.
So there's maybe some talent there, but do you see any of those guys pushing in any way to get past this Dyson Orlando platoon that's probably in place?
I think it's pretty unlikely. I do remember I read something that J.J. Piccolo was on a radio interview, and he mentioned Raymond Fuentes as a left-handed hitter that they could have on the bench for the later innings. You know, it because a lot of big name relievers are right-handed, so if they had a lefty on the bench, they could use him. And I kind of chuckled to myself because pinch hitters and Ned Yost, they don't really mix well.
It's not really a thing.
Yeah, but I do like what I've seen from Fuentes. He's got a short, quick swing, pretty good contact guy, a lot of speed, really a good defender in center, well above average in left. He just doesn't have the arm that like a Jerod Dyson has. But he's a similar player to Dyson, you know, a lot of speed, slap hitting. He has probably a little more pop, and he does have a better minor league track record than Dyson. So he's younger than Dyson. He's hit better than Dyson did in the minors, but he really hasn't gotten a chance in the big leagues just because his speed is only like a 65 instead of an 80.
Right.
So he has to live with, you know, double plus speed. But, you know, he could be a guy, and he's out of options, I'm pretty sure. So they may try and get him on the roster just so they don't have to lose him through waivers. Right. It's not like they have anything invested in him. But,
right.
You know, he
if
does
they can keep a
something.
Good player in the system, you may as well keep them.
Exactly. And you know, you mentioned the 40-man is stocked with with outfielders.
Yeah.
With Bonifacio and Martinez and Eibner and Bubba, who, you know, obviously – has gotten plenty of airtime himself, but he won't be in the discussion for
not for this no.
opening day for sure. Eibner is a guy that I've watched for a couple years, and when you just look at him, he looks similar to Bubba Starlin. Like, he looks like a guy who could be a star, and crazy athleticism. You know, they drafted him to be an outfielder, but he also was a pitcher at Arkansas. So he's got great arm strength, easily a plus defender in right field, can handle his own in center as well. Not obviously the range isn't great, and he's always had plenty of power. But
if you don't hit the ball,
yeah, the contact issues have been there. The biggest thing last year, he did improve that strikeout rate. He dropped, I think, through July or August, he had cut probably 7 or 8 points off of his strikeout rate. It was down to 19% in the middle of the summer. He did have a few more strikeouts as the season wore on, and he still had issues with injuries, which has been a problem for his entire professional career. But it did look like he had made some adjustments. I haven't gotten a chance to talk to him yet. I'm hoping to meet with him after spring training and try and figure out some of the adjustments that he made to his swing. But he has so much power that he generates from his hips, and he just basically lets his athleticism take over whenever he swings the bat. So he can definitely offer some things offensively as long as he's making contact. He may still have some issues with off-speed stuff. He's really got to improve his pitch selection, which he did somewhat last year. Just has to keep building on that. But he does fit the mold of the Royals. You know, he can run and defend really well, so he could be somebody to watch. But you know, we mentioned them stashing Orlando as a fifth outfielder. That's not a role that they want to do with Eibner. They added him to the 40-man roster, and he's still young enough to think that he can make an impact full-time. So he'll probably be a full-timer with the Storm Chasers yet again. And I think that's true to a lesser extent with Jose Martinez. You know, he mentioned 384 average in the PCL last year. He did miss some games, so he barely qualified for the batting title. But he came out of nowhere. He was a minor league signing out of, I think he was a Braves system, and just hit like crazy. And he's a really interesting player to watch because he's 6'7".
Yeah.
And I actually watched him play second base for a game last year because the Chasers had like three injuries to their infielders and they had no other options really. So he played second base for a few innings. But it was interesting to watch him because, like I said, he's 6'7", he's got really long arms, but every time he hit the ball, he made very loud contact. It wasn't him getting jammed or anything like that. It was loud off the bat. He has a lot of pre-pitch movement with his bat. He's got a really big-time waggle, but as soon as that pitch comes in, he gets everything locked into place so he can get the barrel right to the ball. I was a little surprised that he wasn't getting pitched on the inner third more. It seemed like pitchers could kind of exploit that part, get him jammed up, kind of tie up his long arms a little bit. But I don't know if he just gets enough plate coverage that it hasn't been an issue, because he seemed to get really good coverage everything outside, and like I said, every time he made contact, it was loud. So I'll be curious to see how he reacts to another turn in the PCL. You know, he had a ridiculous batting average on balls in play last year, so he's not going to get hit 384 again. But maybe the coaches helped him unlock something in his swing, and he could be something to watch this season. Again, maybe not out of camp, but as a guy that could make an impact at some point this summer, because they did add him to the 40-man. You don't normally see them do that with a player that they don't think can contribute. So definitely a curious possible contributor.
I don't know how you can – second base.
Yeah, it was interesting.
Like, who was playing third base and first base in that game then?
I think Cuthbert was at third, and let's see, Witt was in left. And maybe it might have been when Calixte was with the big league club, or he was at short. Uh-huh. And whoever it was, it was some other minor leaguer that they had hurt his hand or something, and like he got hit on the hand earlier in the game, and he had to leave.
And had to leave in the game.
And there was another infielder who was out for a few days with an injury, and they were just shorthanded. I wasn't sure where they were going to go, but they put 6'7" Jose Martinez at second base, and he only got like one ground ball, which he fielded awkwardly, but it was still fun.
I can't even imagine that. I remember when they were thinking about Mark Tien at second base, and it's like, he's 6'3", I think, and that's still really big for second base relative to most second basemen. I can't even imagine that. It's just a weird thing. Another guy, moving on from Martinez, who, yeah, I'm intrigued by him. Like, I'm just like, you know, there's always like the end joke is to bug Jeffrey Flanagan because he called Carlos Baguero, you know, the question of, hey, is he the next Jose Bautista? You know, this post-hype guy who unlocks it late, and, you know, maybe that's him. It's definitely, those guys are always the exception, obviously, but I mean, someone hits 384, that's going to catch somebody's attention. So that's interesting. We still got Jorge Bonifacio, too, who, despite all of this, is what, 22?
Yeah, he and Cuthbert are both like only 22 years old. It seems like they've been around forever, but they're still really young.
That's crazy to me. And Bonifacio doesn't even like factor into any of this. I think he'll probably get 5 or 6 at bats and then hit minor league camp. And, you know, if they're going to do anything with anybody, it's going to be pulling up guys like Eibner, like Martinez and such to fill in if there are injuries. You mentioned Whit Merrifield, and he's invited to camp. He's had some good years, but he hasn't really gotten any kind of a look. Is he getting the Ed Lucas, Anthony Saratelli kind of super utility guy stigma where they're just never going to bring him up?
You know, he was actually on the verge of getting called up when Gordon went down last year.
Wasn't he pulled from the game?
Yeah,
that
he
night?
Was pulled from the game. He was getting hugs in the dugout because I think Minda Haas, who photographs the Storm Chasers, she was mentioning that, you know, it seemed like he was getting congratulatory hugs and everything. But then they obviously changed course. But he is a guy that I think the Royals like a lot because he fits the former stereotypical Royal of, you know, gritty gamer, plays right. hard, runs hard. And he definitely plays above his tools. Like every time I watch him, you know, you watch him swing the bat and you're like, eh. And then you watch him just bust his butt down the first base line or do whatever he can to field a ground ball in the hole behind second base. Or, you know, he played a lot more left field last year. He doesn't have the strong arm that he can handle right field probably. But, you know, he'll play anywhere and he will play as hard as he possibly can. So I wouldn't be surprised if he does get added to the 40-man at some point. Just to kind of reward him for, you know, kind of a lifetime achievement award kind of thing.
Right.
But, yeah, I don't – he kind of regressed after a strong 2014. 2015 didn't go as well for him. So I he may have kind of lost a little bit of whatever luster he gained. But he's a fun guy to watch. Like I said, he plays super hard, and I guarantee if he did make the big league roster – Ryan and Hud would say gritty no fewer than like 24 times in his first play appearance.
I would look forward to that.
Yeah.
Gritty. And then when I mentioned Anthony Saratelli, he just recently announced that he's retiring from baseball. Never did get that call up, unfortunately. It seemed like he might have gotten it with the Mets a couple years ago, but just never happened. He was always good to us, talked to us a few times about his little journey. Interesting guy, so you might go seek out those old episodes. But moving on, we've kind of covered the guys who are already in the system who might be outfielders. I don't think we've missed anybody, have we? I mean, we talked about Bubba in passing. I, again, don't think he's going to be involved. But there are still a lot of outfielders out there on the free agent market who could be of interest. I mean, obviously, Dexter Fowler is number one. He does carry the baggage of a draft pick. The Royals haven't really been linked to him at all, so I don't expect it to happen. I think it would be really fun if the Royals signed him. They're also in a weird position in that they kind of see their window for the next 2 years and probably don't want to surrender another draft pick, which is reasonable. Especially when there are other options out there and not necessarily guys that are severe downgrades from Fowler. Definitely not as good, but not guys who really fall off drastically. So you know, I guess I'll just shout out a couple of names and you can kind of rank them informally on the spot for me. Dexter Fowler, Austin Jackson, Marlon Byrd, Drew Stubbs. Is that a good group? I can't tell.
Drew Stubbs, actually, I think he signed a minor league deal with the Rangers.
Did he? I know Ike Davis had. I hadn't checked Drew Stubbs.
Like, I think he actually signed back in like December, maybe, but it was not reported. I just remember seeing
something in the
as an option, and
in
I
the Baseball
it,
America
he,
transactions.
I'm pretty sure he signed. I'm pretty sure he's signed somewhere.
Okay, then we won't worry about him.
Yeah. but, you know, of the bigger names left, obviously you mentioned Fowler. He'd be a really good fit. Like you said, he'd be really fun. The problem is the draft pick, and you all, if you believe in Jerod Dyson, especially as alongside of a platoon, Fowler isn't that significant of, a, of an upgrade because he's not as good of a defender as Dyson. I've been a Dexter Fowler fan for a few years. I've wanted the Royals to trade for him before the Astros traded for him and then before the Cubs traded for him.
Right.
So I would love to see him in right field. I think he's probably a better fit in left field, but just because his arm isn't very good. But obviously that's kind of taken in Kansas City.
Sure. for a few years.
Yeah. But I do think he would improve the roster, but I totally understand not wanting to commit the draft pick when they're already going to be a good team for the next 2 years. It's not like he's upgrading over Alex Rios or Jeff Francoeur, whatever. You know, he's upgrading over a pretty good player already, so it is a pretty significant cost, even if the contract numbers that are coming out are true. Like, if somebody can get him for 2 years, $20 million, that's a steal.
Yeah.
But of those other guys, Marlon Byrd, he's an interesting name because he does offer a lot of power from the right side. I'd prefer he never steps foot in the outfield.
Right. The Royals have been linked to him in a trade scenarios for a couple of years here and there, but never pulled the trigger. And he always had that vesting option that the Royals, I think, were afraid of, probably rightfully so.
Yeah, and it seems like I could see him maybe waiting around until middle of spring training and signing a minor league contract. But I think my favorite name that would make some sense for the Royals is Austin Jackson. He does strike out a lot more than you would expect a Royal to.
Sure.
But he's very good defensively. He's got speed. He's got a little bit of power. And he hits lefties extremely well. So even if you don't want to give him the full-time job, you could still keep him as the short side of platoon with Dyson. And you're not really risking anything defensively because he can handle center field. He can handle right. He can handle left. And he's still unsigned. You know, the outfielder market is still pretty saturated, and I think he'd be a pretty good fit with this roster. He's still only, gosh, is he only 28? No, he just turned 29 2 weeks ago. So, you know, I don't know if they're wanting to commit a guaranteed roster spot, but if he hangs around long enough, maybe get him to a minor league deal and see what happens in camp. But yeah, those are the names that probably make the most sense. Would be Jackson, Byrd, and Fowler. I said Rios, and I really wasn't thinking about him, but you know, maybe as a possibility later on. But I definitely wouldn't bet any amount of money on it.
Right. I hope not. So I guess I can buy it on Jackson. I do. I'm not sure on the strikeouts. I guess if you're in a full lineup of guys who generally don't strike out, it's not as big of a deal, and he does have secondary ways to help, you know, defensively and with his speed, like you mentioned. He does seem like a guy who would be like a one-year deal, recoup some value, hit the market again, see what he can do. He's always been well regarded in you know, prospect circles, you know, big part of a couple of trades here and there, so he's intriguing at least. We'll see how that ends up going. I don't know if we're missing any other names. I don't think there are some other guys, but not necessarily outfielders who are out there. I mean, I think Tim Lincecum's still out there. I think he'd be cool to sign, but I don't think the Royals will do it. I don't even know what contract he's going to get. I guess Jeremy Guthrie's out there. The Royals might want him to help coach, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, kind of an older Mitch Meyer. Wait, he is older than Mitch Meyer, right? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
A couple years.
Yeah. Yeah. And Guthrie's still hanging around Kansas City, too, which is surprising. I would have thought, I mean, I guess if he makes his home here, he makes his home here, but I would kind of think he wouldn't. You know, being someone from Stanford and who's a big fan of Oregon, I think he'd settle back out west while he's a free agent.
Yeah, I mean, he still has kids in junior high and high school and everything.
Yeah.
So maybe he's wanting to wait until after this school year, perhaps.
Yeah, that would make sense. He did bounce around a little bit, Baltimore to Colorado to Kansas City, so maybe get him some stability. Not that we're going to advocate for him to sign a free agent contract with the Royals at all anyway.
Oh, yeah. Like, minor league deal, maybe, if that.
Minor league. But
that would still be too risky.
Because he would find his way back, because that's what Bruce Chen did.
Exactly.
It's like, you don't. Great guy, Jeremy Guthrie. Pitching days, I think, are pretty close to numbered. So.
Yeah.
Let's see. Did we miss anybody? I don't think we.
No, you mentioned Lincecum. I've kind of been assuming he would sign with the Mariners. It just seemed like the perfect fit for him.
Yeah.
But I'll be curious to see how his workout goes because I know he was going to be doing pitching for some teams just to kind of show that he's relatively healthy, I guess.
Yeah. If he can hit like 94 in that, he's going to get some money.
Yes.
If he hits 89, well, he'll get a little bit of money. We'll see. I think he'd be intriguing, but I don't know where. I mean, you'd find a way to fit him in if he was worth it, but I just don't know. I guess if he's going to be worth it, he probably prices himself out of the Royals range at this stage. So it would have to be the flyer of all flyers if it doesn't go well and the other, I don't know how many teams pass on him, and he somehow makes it to the Royals. So I don't know. We will see. But I think with that, we'll go ahead and wrap this up. I should go ahead and point you to Hunter Samuels' Twitter. It's just Hunter Samuels. Very easy to remember. Are you still doing stuff with Pine Tar Press, or are you just doing your own thing now?
I haven't written on Pine Tar Press for a while. I'm going to. I just haven't gotten around to it. I had some technical difficulties, so I started a personal blog on Tumblr, but I don't remember the URL right now because I've only written one thing. But yeah, if I post something, you can check out my Twitter for sure, and I'll have links to whatever.
Yep, it'll be on Twitter along with a bunch of puns.
Yes.
That I will pretend to groan about and slightly delight in.
Shameful appreciation.
I told someone once that puns are generally awful, and then I'll make a pun and she will remind me that I said that, and I will point out that I said generally and that mine are good. But if you like puns, if you like baseball, if you like smart baseball thoughts, go follow. Well, are you still at 1738?
You know, I think I am. I was as of like 4:50 today. Let's check out the old Twitter.
So if you're going to follow Hunter, let him know first so he can go block somebody so you can keep him
at 1738. Oh, no, I've lost two followers. I'm at 1736. I need two followers, okay, people.
So we need two followers for Hunter. So go follow Hunter as soon as you hear this. And maybe Halaka's account. Probably not.
Probably not.
Shouldn't.
I can't hide my puns from the rest of the world.
Right. They have to be let free. The other housekeeping, we're going to be planning a watch party at Kelly's Westport Inn on March 19th. That is a Saturday. That is one of the first three Royals games that they're going to be broadcasting. I think they're playing Texas in San Antonio. It's one of those games where they're in the Alamo Dome with like a 280-foot right field fence.
That'd be awesome.
So if you want to see Eric Hosmer hit some dingers, you should come out to Kelly's March 19th. I think it's a 2 o'clock game. It's going to be March Madness going on too, but that's okay. They've got plenty of TVs there and a lot of good beer and great pizza, and should be a good time. Come out, meet some Twitter people, or you can just do your own thing. Just show up and eat some pizza in the corner. That's cool. We're not gonna judge you. But with that, I want to thank Hunter Samuels for coming on and filling in this week. Next week, we're going to talk to Craig Brown from Royals Authority. We'll see if we can get him on Skype or if he's going to be on his phone. He's one of those curmudgeonly kind of types. So the technology, not really. I think he does some like technological stuff for his day job, but he'll be on next week. I don't know what we're going to talk about yet. We'll have to figure that out. Follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can always find us on Stitcher, iTunes, and soon Google Play Music. And I think that's about it. So for Hunter and for Jeff and the new young one with the David Price jersey, I'm sure by this point. wanted to thank you for listening. And as always, go Royals. Thanks for listening. This has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can find us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/KansasCityBaseballVault. If you want to email your thoughts or comments, send those to KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com. And don't forget, you can also sign up and subscribe through iTunes, through Stitcher, or you can just go to RoyalsPodcast.com or KansasCityBaseballVault.com for any updates.